It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you for another edition of Phillies Today. Big game down in New Orleans this weekend. Don't know if you've heard. Eagles facing off against the Kansas City Chiefs down in the Super Bowl in New Orleans, but in other news, the trucks have left Philadelphia, folks. The Phillies are headed down to Clearwater as the trucks have left from Citizens Bank Park. They do the ceremonial, send off where all the gear and all the stuff they pack in there is headed down I-95 and will be down in Florida. Probably should already be there as left this Monday, and it's always, for us baseball fans, a good sign to see when, the truck leaves Philadelphia, and it's a sign that baseball season is coming, and it's very exciting. The bridge has been created with the Super Bowl being this week, and, after this Sunday, we'll be focused on the Phils, because I'll tell you what, after the Sixers trade deadline this week, after the Flyers struggles, I think a lot of attention is going to be turned onto the Phils, and rightly so, and putting a wrap on free agency is something I'm going to do in this pod. After Pete Alonso signs last night, going to get into that right off the top here. We're going to get into, some more just free agency philosophy type of things where I always, over the past couple of years, have thought it's kind of odd how some of the big name stars like Pete Alonso and, a guy like Alex Bregman still out there. And you look at last year, like Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell were still out there to the very end. And, even you look back to when Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber signed, that was all the way in March. And I know that had a lot to do with the pandemic, but I still don't love that guys signed this late. It feels like it messes them up for the season, and it doesn't allow them really to mesh well with their ball clubs. So wanted to talk about that in a little bit of detail later on in the pod as well. And also some interesting Rob Thompson audio that I wanted to play for you as he went on Jim Salisbury's podcast and kind of explained how he plans on tinkering with the lineup a little bit throughout spring training, and that, Kyle Schwarber isn't necessarily a lock to lead off for this baseball team this year. And Bryson Stott is also mentioned in the soundbite. So thought it was interesting and thought it was definitely worth bringing up. So we'll play that for you later as well. And kind of to wrap up everything on the podcast today, I want to talk about something that's been on my mind this week with the Super Bowl being down in New Orleans this weekend. And that is neutral site versus home field championships. And obviously the Super Bowl, it's a one game, winner take all. It's not a series like basketball, like baseball, and like hockey. So it's kind of tough to play it in just, the home field or whoever's the home field advantage. It's a league event. They've been doing it this way for years, and I totally understand it. But I wonder if it takes away a little bit of the local, build up or lead up going into the game. It's just been something I've been thinking about this week. And, with 2 weeks in between the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, my mind kind of starts to wander off and think about these things. So want to bring that up and relate it to the Phillies. And obviously they just hosted a World Series 2 years ago. So going to relate it back to that. And also just, Citizens Bank Park compared to the other stadiums right now. Want to talk about, because there are new plans for where the Flyers and Sixers are going to be playing down in South Philadelphia soon, with them reaching an agreement with Comcast and them building a new arena, probably, it seems like, in the next decade or so. And also with Lincoln Financial Field, there's been talks about potentially a new stadium being built with a dome on it possibly, and so they can bring events there. And I think that Citizens Bank Park is going to be one of those ballparks that sort of stands the test of time, and that, you know, we'll be taking our kids to one day, and you know, maybe even my grandkids to one day. So I thought it would be an interesting thing to bring up, just how I think it's going to age compared to the rest of the stadiums and arenas, you know, that are in Philadelphia here. So bunch to talk about. Obviously, you know, the main focus is on the Eagles in town this week, but the Phils are creeping up on us, and I'm excited about it. And getting started with the Pete Alonso thing last night, it was definitely, you know, not shocking, but in a press conference the other week when the Mets made a few of their signings, it was like Winker and it was a couple of other guys up there. You know, Steve Cohen spoke to the media and he was asked specifically about Pete Alonso. And I brought this up in one of my previous podcasts, and Steve Cohen said that, you know, this is one of the toughest negotiations that he had ever had to go through as an owner of the New York Mets, and that they probably weren't bringing Pete Alonso back at this point. Like, that's, he felt in his heart at that very moment that Pete Alonso was probably no longer going to be a New York Met. And ever since he had said that, you know, I don't want to, you know, be the Brian Windhorst meme here of, you know, something was up, but it just felt like a pure negotiation tactic. And it was one that obviously worked because the market for Pete Alonso clearly was not there. It had been something that had lingered on into February now, with spring training coming up in what, less than 3 weeks. So it was something that I think as the longer it went on, the more it felt like Pete Alonso was probably going to go back to the New York Mets. Because if the Mets didn't bring back Pete Alonso, they would have made the move for Mark Vientos to play first base this year after he played third, you know, coming up into the minors and all throughout last year. And Brett Beatty, who was, you know, a former top prospect for them, had really struggled since coming up. And then he would have been the third baseman and Vientos would have played first. And it would have, you know, put a guy out of position who would really, you know, kind of flourish for them last year in Vientos, even though my theory on Vientos is that, or I mean, he killed the Phillies in the postseason, don't get me wrong, but it felt like he did all of his damage off fastballs, especially in the postseason. And it just feels like one of those guys who might regress back down to the mean this year, just considering that, you know, pitchers have film on him, and I'm sure some of his advanced stats have been, you know, kind of gathered by scouts, and pitchers are going to pitch him differently this year. I think he's going to get a heavy dose of breaking balls throughout the season. But anywho, I just think that it was a move that made a lot of sense for the Mets from that perspective, and from a perspective of, like, Pete Alonso is a big part of the identity of that team. And as big of a dork as he might be sometimes with the home run derby stuff and just, you know, the cheesiness that is Pete Alonso, like, he was a big part of that playoff run last year and a big part of the identity of that ball club. And I always thought it was kind of a mistake, especially for an owner like, you know, Steve Cohen, not to bring him back. And what, he was paid $54 million over 2 years. Like, that's a deal that I would have been shocked if somebody else gave him that deal and the Mets passed on that. And considering the history he's had with that team, the rapport he seems to have with all of his teammates on the Mets, like, I just think that that was probably the smart move for them. And I know David Stearns is the GM, but at the same time, you're the New York Mets and you have the richest owner in baseball. There's no reason for you to operate necessarily like a small market team. Like, I understand you want to make decisions that a Milwaukee Brewers type of club would make in terms of, you know, smart signings and, you know, getting guys who might be overlooked by some of the big market teams and wanting to, you know, bring them in to potentially, you know, help your ball club in different ways. But at the same time, you know, you have all this money, and to not bring Pete Alonso back just for the fact that you think he's probably getting overpaid, like, so what if you overpay for Pete Alonso on a shorter-term deal? Like, it is going to help your team, and ultimately, I think the Mets are better today than they were yesterday. So I don't think their lineup necessarily scares me as much as Atlanta still. Like, I still think Atlanta, with a healthy lineup this year, with Acuna back, with Austin Riley for a full season, with Albies for a full season, with Matt Olson probably bouncing back after a rough year last year, I still think that lineup likely is the biggest threat to the Phillies in the NL East. But at the same time, the Mets are definitely a better ball club than they would have been without Pete Alonso, that is for sure. But, and it's funny, I still think the Mets, everyone wants to crown them of having this great offseason. And obviously, you know, when you bring Juan Soto, who is the best free agent on the market, people are going to be excited over that. And I understand it. Juan Soto is going to help them a lot and, you know, probably will be the most impactful free agent signing this offseason of anybody in baseball. But at the same time, like, I still think their pitching staff has a ton of issues there. I don't know if maybe Ranger Suarez being, you know, the odd man out here, but I don't know if they're any of their top five guys in their rotation, whether it's Senga, whether it's Minaya, whether it's David Peterson, whether it's Clay Holmes who they brought in, I don't think any of those guys would crack the top five in the Phillies rotation. Wheeler, Nola, Luzardo, Chris Sanchez, I'm taking all four of those guys easy over anybody in that rotation. And, you know, we can have the conversation about Ranger Suarez and the fall off that he had last year and maybe him just getting figured out. But I still think the Phillies have the massive, massive advantage in terms of their pitching rotation. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Mets are still out potentially, you know, scouring the trade market. And a name like Dylan Cease is one I could definitely see coming up for the Mets this year if they're still looking to add to their pitching staff. But if you want to talk about competing with the Dodgers in the National League this year in terms of just a pure arms race and having the staff to compete with that, there's no question that the Phillies, I think, have the best chance to do that in the National League out of any pitching staff that's out there. And, you know, we can talk lineups like the Braves lineup, still stacked. The Phillies lineup, you know, is good, but there's still some question marks there, especially, you know, with Bryson Stott's regression last year. And, you know, will Trey Turner, you know, have a bounce back season as well, even though, you know, batting average was good, but he really tailed off towards the end of the year. I just think that in order to compete with the Dodgers, you're probably going to have to do it with starting pitching in a short series. And I do like, at the end of the day, that the Phillies made an upgrade in the rotation. There are still some question marks with Max Kepler, even though I'm starting to, you know, convince myself more and more on Max Kepler and even the bullpen. Like, I think if Romano stays healthy, he's going to be a guy that's really impactful. And losing Hoffman and losing Estevez, that's, you know, two arms that are difficult to replace. But at the same time, I expect Orion Kerkering to take another step this year. And I have faith in this pitching staff to be able to carry the Phillies, you know, to where they were last season at the end of the year. And hopefully the season is sort of inverted to where they're playing their best baseball towards the end of the season, because I know they lost to the Mets in the playoffs and, you know, they simply outclassed the Phillies. They deserve to win that series. There's no doubt about it. But the Phillies are the better baseball team than the New York Mets right now. I will say that confidently, that I think the Phillies are better than the New York Mets as it stands right now. So that's kind of where I'm at after the Pete signing. And just one thought I had actually before he signed that I was going to talk about, or was planning to talk about prior to the news last, or a couple nights ago, was the fact that guys like Pete Alonso and Alex Bregman can still be out there on the free agent market with this little time to go until spring training. I wish there was a way that there could be almost a deadline of certain qualified guys who are free agents to be able to sign. Like, if you've, you know, I don't know, made an all-star team within the last 2 or 3 years, you have to get signed within a certain date. Because, I don't know, it just feels like these guys are sort of getting exploited in ways where, I mentioned Blake Snell earlier last year, like, the guy came off of a Cy Young Award and couldn't sign until almost, like, I think mid-spring training last year, which is just insane. And it clearly threw off his season, threw off the Giants season a little bit, and he really caught steam towards the end of the year and ended up, you know, having a phenomenal second half. And you almost wonder, if he had signed earlier, would he have been able to sustain that for a whole season and maybe win another Cy Young Award? And instead, he ends up, you know, opting out the Giants and going to the Dodgers, shocker. And, you know, Jordan Montgomery was the same thing last year. And I even think Nick Castellanos a little bit in his first season with the Phillies. He didn't sign until March, mid-spring training. And, you know, he struggled mightily in the first half of his first season with the Phillies. We remember it well. And the frustrations were, you know, very public. And, you know, he's going back and forth with reporters in the clubhouse. And I just think it puts players of that caliber in a certain position to where they have to get meshed in with the team so quickly. And they have to get, you know, adjusted to new surroundings so quickly to where it's going to put them in a difficult spot to begin the year. So I almost wish that there was a rule to where if you have a certain qualifications over the course of the previous 2 to 3 seasons, whether it's, like I said, an all-star, whether it's a silver slugger, whether it's, you know, gold glove, not gold glove, but probably like a silver slugger or an all-star, that you have to be signed by a certain date or else the Players Association has to get involved. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. And I feel like with Bregman, it's another situation right now to where you know, this guy's, you know, getting exploited big time because, you know, he's obviously a winner in his past and he's still a very good player. And I understand the numbers haven't been down over the past 2 years, but there is no way that Alex Bregman shouldn't be signed to this point. And I understand, like, part of it's on him. He's still asking for a 6 to 7 year deal, I believe, which I can understand teams being very wary about that and not wanting to give Bregman that type of year or those type of years at this stage in his career. And that, and the agent has to be able to work with the Players Association and, you know, the teams as well to be able to say, hey, look, like, we're willing to negotiate, but at the same time, this is the type of, like, negotiating terms that we want, and we're going to find a way to meet in the middle here. But for him to potentially be going into spring training, not on a team, is just, you know, absurd. And I still have this little fantasy to where I picture Alex Bregman signing for the Phillies or with the Phillies on not a cheap deal, but just sort of, you know, a low ball or more of a, I don't want to say a low ball deal, but just a deal that's very team friendly. And he moves the second, Bryson Stott moves the short. And I think what is inevitably going to happen is Trey Turner moves to the outfield one day. And why not just have that happen right now? I mean, he has been a minus defender at shortstop for what, the past, you know, his tenure as a Philly almost. And if you're going to make the move to the outfield, you might as well do it now. And I know Max Kepler is kind of their project that they're working on in left field that they hope is going to, you know, potentially reemerge as a quality hitter this year. But at the same time, I just think Trey Turner is going to be in the outfield eventually. So why not get it started now? He's under contract for a long time. And even if he doesn't necessarily want to move out there, I think it's something that they're going to have to do eventually. So you might as well face it now while, you know, you have a chance to get a guy like Bregman and potentially play him at second, and you can still keep Bohm at third. And he's Bregman has mentioned that he would play second base. So that's kind of where my head is at on him. Not that I expect that to happen. The Phillies would have to probably get off Taijuan Walker, as I've mentioned before, in terms of just staying under the tax and getting off that money. It seems like that's something that John Middleton is, that's kind of where his head's at this point. He wants to stay under that next tax threshold. But yeah, probably not going to happen, but I just think it would be interesting. And that's kind of where I'm at on the whole free agency thing. It feels like there are two guys every year to where you're getting towards spring training or even in the spring training, and they aren't signed yet. And it just makes for kind of an awkward transition into their new team. So that's my thought on the free agency stuff right now. And wanted to play this Rob Thompson audio real quick because I transitioned here. He talked about what the lineup is going to look like this year. And I have a feeling that Kyle Schwarber is not locked into the leadoff spot right now. And I'm somebody who's probably always going to be in the camp of wanting Kyle Schwarber to hit leadoff. I just think the at-bat he works, the amount of walks he draws, and there's nothing I love more than a leadoff Kyle Schwarber home run, just in terms of momentum and, you know, getting your team on the board first. But here's what Rob Thompson had to say with Jim Salisbury on their Phillies podcast about what they could be doing in spring training in terms of tinkering with the lineup.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego sets play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Rob, if you were to tinker with leadoff, who would be your candidates to hit there?
I think you're probably talking about Trey.
Because you mentioned Stott, you see him being that guy.
Yeah.
Back, so Stott wouldn't be a candidate?
Well, the thing is that, you know, we're so left-handed, and you want Harper and you want Schwarber getting as many as at-bats as you can. And now you put Stott in the leadoff spot. Now you're really left-handed at the top, and it creates it might create a problem even if you're facing a right-hander. Everybody's got three lefties in the pen, it seems, anymore, and you know, they'll just start matching up on you.
Yeah, so that was Rob Thompson with Jim Salisbury on The Phillies Show, their podcast. They do a great job. And I thought it was interesting because when they signed Trey originally, like, Rob kind of made it clear that he wanted Trey to be the leadoff hitter. And, you know, we know what happened with Trey's struggles early on in his Phillies tenure until, you know, the standing ovation and everything in August. Then he really took off. He never really got the chance to kind of reclaim that spot back. They, I think, played with the lineup a little bit last year in the very beginning of the year. But once, you know, Schwarber got back in that leadoff spot, he really, you know, took off with it once again. And if you're going to put Trey in that spot, you know, I'm thinking, what would it be? You'd have Trey, Harper, and I know Rob really likes the righty-lefty thing. Like, I would be okay with Trey, Harper, Schwarber, and then Boehm or Castellanos, but I'm thinking it would probably be Trey, Harper, Boehm, Schwarber, Castellanos. But my problem is, I think Schwarber just works such a good at-bat that I don't want him losing those at-bats. So that's why I've always kind of been in the camp of wanting Schwarber to be the leadoff hitter, and I think that's probably, you know, maybe they have two different lineups based off of lefty-righty, and if it's a right-hander, Schwarber may lead off, and if it's a left-hander, you might have Trey there. And I agree with what Rob said. You don't want to, you know, put too many lefties at the top, just considering that with a three-batter rule, they can just, you know, match up lefty on you. Because in my ideal world, if that wasn't, you know, a thing, you'd want Harper, or you'd want Schwarber and Harper getting the most at-bats. But I understand they don't want to stack two lefties up there. So I just think it's interesting. It's definitely something to monitor this spring training. It'll be very, you know, interesting to see how Rob Thompson comes out right out of the gate with his lineups. And I think Trey's going to get certainly an opportunity to be in that leadoff spot. I just hope that it's not the Trey Turner that we saw last year, to where the chase was really high and it ended up, you know, kind of biting them in the playoffs. And that's not what you want out of your leadoff hitter. I like the approach Kyle Schwarber has, even though obviously he's not as good on the base pass nearly as Trey Turner is. So that'll be something to watch out for sure. And as I wrap up the pod here, I wanted to get into some interesting talk. And, you know, it's the Super Bowl this week. Everyone wants to talk a little bit about the Eagles as well. So I'm going to sort of mix in the Eagles into the Phillies here as we sort of wrap up. So earlier this week, I just had this thought going into my head because, you know, I went to the Eagles games, the divisional game and the NFC Championship, and they were unbelievable. Like, the fans were incredible. The atmospheres were great. And, you know, it's the same thing with the Phillies. Like, Red October is one of the best experiences you can have. And going to Citizens Bank Park for a Phillies playoff game, it's, you know, peak fan experience right there. It is one of those to where if you can get there, I highly recommend it. It is unbelievable. And I know it's expensive, but it's one of those things to where every time I spend the money, I go, I'm like, man, that was so worth it. And I think, like, in my heart, I'm obviously excited for the Super Bowl, and I'm excited for the game. I'm excited for everything that comes with it. But there's something about having a championship hosted in your hometown. Like, I saw a clip the other day of Bryce's home run in Game 3 of the 2022 World Series, where the Phillies went on that barrage off Lance McCullers and were just hitting bombs left and right off him, where Bryce hit that home run in his first at-bat in Philly in the World Series, and it, like, sent chills down my spine. And part of the Super Bowl festivities, I get it, in New Orleans, is that it's a league event. It's the NFL showcase of their league, the two best teams playing at a neutral site, and obviously in a dome, to where elements aren't going to affect anything down in New Orleans. But, you know, I think part of the luster of what makes the World Series so cool, and what makes, you know, championships and other sports really cool, is the fact that, you know, the home fans get to see their teams on the biggest stage in their respective sport. And to me, like, how many diehard Eagles fans are going down to New Orleans to watch the Super Bowl in the Superdome? Like, there aren't that many, I think. And even with the Chiefs fans as well, like, they don't get that experience either. And I always kind of hesitate to be a fan of the neutral site championships. And I think that's one of those things in baseball I probably appreciate a lot, is that, you know, that 2022 World Series, that Game 3, even though I wasn't at that one, I went to the no-hitter, of course, which was not as fun. And that's, you know, sort of the gamble you take when going to a championship game of that ilk. That Game 3 was one that everyone in attendance that night will never forget. And I just think having the experience in your hometown and in your home ballpark is something that, you know, you'll always remember. And it's just, I'm really excited for the game once again. Like, be watching it with all my buddies. It's going to be great. We'll be in Philly. If they win, we'll go on Broad Street. It'll be awesome. But I always just think to myself, like, what if they could find a way to have championships hosted in a certain city? Like, the Chiefs have the better record out of the Eagles and the Chiefs this year, so, you know, it would be in Kansas City. But I just think that would add a cool another element to it, to where, you know, you would have the biggest stage in football at their home stadium. So just a thought I had and something that was going through my mind. I understand, obviously, why they have it at the neutral site, but, you know, just something that crossed my mind. And, you know, it also makes me bring up how it makes me think about how grateful I am to have Citizens Bank Park as the Phillies, you know, home stadium and home ballpark, because the Sixers and Flyers are getting a new arena down in South Philly. They're not going to be in Center City anymore after they agreed to that new deal there. And it looks like the Eagles, based off what we're hearing off Radio Row this week, could potentially be getting a new stadium where they might have a dome and to host, you know, other events like the Super Bowl maybe, and like a Final Four, and like some different concerts, things of that nature. And while they're getting new stadiums, Citizens Bank Park is going to be one of those where I think it stands the test of time, and it's going to be years and years and years until the Phillies get a new ballpark. Because in my opinion, and this isn't just me being having some baseball bias here, I think it is by far the best stadium, ballpark, arena that we have here in Philadelphia. And I just think it's going to be one of those stadiums that stands the test of time. And hopefully, you know, when we're looking back in 80 years, we look at it as like a Fenway or like a Wrigley, a stadium of that nature, to where it's been a historic landmark in this town. And, you know, grandfathers are taking their grandsons to the same stadium that they grew up with. So that was kind of my thoughts. And just as some of the news coming out on a potential dome for the Eagles and a new arena for the Sixers and the Flyers, how appreciative that we should be for Citizens Bank Park. So with that, that's going to put a wrap on this edition of Phillies Today. Everyone, enjoy the game this weekend. Go Birds. It's going to be awesome. Hopefully we have a parade down Broad Street next week. And hey, if not, Phil spring training right around the corner. So that'll be good. So for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstern. Have a good one, everybody. See ya.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.